Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. Sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 733.
Come on.
I don't know.
A milestone.
Scream.
It is a milestone. Yeah, yeah. Scream 6.
Screamed.
Five cream 6.
Yeah. Let's go around the table.
I prefer to think of it as Ghostface Takes Manhattan.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He broke rotation. What do we do in this case? Some people just don't know how to go in rotation. He broke rotation. What's the...
Well, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And joining us today via the magic of ZoomTube is Ryan Terry, Professor Horror. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Thanks for the timely invitation to join us. It's just amazing how real life sometimes mimics the movies, or perhaps the movies inspires it. So whatever black magic happens, I will neither confirm nor deny that I may have been instrumental in the results.
Well, we're glad you could make it, Ryan.
That would make this episode not about Scream.
That's right.
But about Stab.
Yes. Ah, very meta. Yes. Very meta.
I mean, meta?
Yeah.
Meta.
All the metas.
Yeah.
So I guess we should start by asking Joe what happened. He said
man.
He was hit by a car.
Yeah. Not my person.
Ryan was like really doubling down. He's like, well, if they've already got a guest,
yeah, right.
And they don't get taken out, I've got to at least
got a host.
Ryan somehow managed to make sure I tried to get hit twice in one day. So the first, yes, I was in two car accidents yesterday.
Oh, no.
So the first one is no big, you know, whatever. Guy blew through a red light, hit the side of the car, not the end of the world.
Is it work?
First one was not at work. Second one, yeah, same thing. Sitting at a red light, my light turns green. I go ahead and go, and a guy blows through a red light and smashes into the side of my work car. I don't remember much after that. I woke up walking to the, I remember walking to the stretcher. I was, I actually just got out of the hospital. 3 hours ago.
And
that decided dedication.
I'm not missing Scream.
So wow.
That's came the, yeah, it, just to be clear. We want this on the record. This isn't about commitment to the show.
No.
Oh,
it's about commitment to
a franchise,
to the slasher movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Cause that's for legal purposes, can you at least state that we did not ask you to come on the show after we knew you
we
got
didn't
into a car
know
accident.
Until well, he
I'm not
sat
saying,
down.
I'm not saying that. No, I am here of my own.
They made him come to a movie podcast after two car accidents.
Of my own volition. I am here of my own free will.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Crystal still did the clip out after
that's
she got
what
hit
I'm saying,
car.
Man. And she got hit by a car.
And she got hit
yeah,
by
she
a
was
car.
Like her person.
She was jogging. And we, I don't think we talked about this on the show, but yeah, she was jogging and got hit by a car, flipped ass over tea kettle.
Yeah. I love that phrase, by the way.
Yes.
But you should have seen the car.
Yeah.
Crystal's pretty strong. So
poor car didn't stand a chance.
I was like, did you just fat shame my wife?
I don't think that's how it.
Well, But
Hulk smash.
So my wife is the Hulk in this.
Yeah, right, right. So, women are the monsters. We've talked about this before. Yes, Barbarian. Go back to that episode.
But yeah, partially collapsed slum, lung. I mean, it was.
She got rocked.
Yeah, she did. So
yeah. But here I am.
So, man.
Rocking like a hurricane.
That's right.
That guy's day, you hit a cop car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how does that work out? Well,
you just go straight to jail?
So, I will tell you, in the first instance, when I got hit, I wasn't on shift. I wasn't working. That guy got real lucky. The second, like, I don't know how much I could probably say
currently. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
But, yeah, let's just say... He didn't. Well, all right. I'm just gonna shut up.
Yeah. Okay. Just
physically,
don't.
He's fine.
Yeah.
Nothing happened on that end.
Yeah.
Yes. I would just be scared to death if I hit a cop car. Although it seems like lately in the city of St. Louis, like nobody pays attention to stop signs,
nope.
stop lights.
I mean, you know that
you see the videos online all the time.
You saw that the article about the four people that passed away.
Yeah.
On that, I was the first on scene for that one.
Mm. Gotcha.
So it's been that intersection. Oh, if you're from St. Louis, you know, between on South Grand, between Laclede and Highway 40 is a speedway.
I was there on Friday. I was right in that area too.
Yeah.
On Friday.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. You don't know what's going on around that area.
No. It's... But I'm okay. I am definitely sore. Little concussed, but I'm powering.
Well,
through.
We've got Tylenol upstairs if you need it.
Oh no, I'll be fine.
We've got unused. I got
Mountain Dew,
but that might not be a good
Probably
idea.
Shouldn't do that.
Yes.
<Yeah.
laughs> So before we dig into the movie, shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever you find a podcast. You can find us while you're there. Be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. That's always helpful and good for our egos, which we need
at this point. Yes.
And leave a comment on YouTube too. That's another great way
that's true.
You know,
we are also on the YouTube. We still don't have our vanity URL,
bastards.
We're trying.
YouTube.com/@RealSpoilers. It's easy to remember.
Okay. So I was a little confused on the last episode because I wasn't sure if it was just adding the at symbol or if it was slash at, but you have
it's slash at. Sorry, youtube.com/@RealSpoilers. Now here's the kicker. If you go to youtube.com/RealSpoilers, this page is not found. It's not like anyone owns it.
Right.
And you've got slash the clip out, so it's not like those pages don't exist with just, but no, you literally cannot
make a
vanity URL right now because when they deactivated the system at the time where we got our page to the point where we could get one, and then when they brought it back, everyone had usernames instead of just URLs. So they reactivated the system with only being able to choose at and then.
I wonder if they're going to take our vanity URL at some
point. You just wonder if it's going to convert at some point. But yeah, it's like it's just so dumb though that it says this page is not found. It's like, well, if nothing else is parked there, just throw it.
Yeah, like
to us. Yeah, anyway,
you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/RealSpoilers. No at. While you're there, like the page, join the group. It's called the League of Show Sharers because we're hoping you'll share an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode last week include Librarian Cynthia, Julianne Jordan, Phil Timon, Ralph Tribble, Chris.
Congratulations.
What's that?
Ralph Tribble.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did that last week.
I know.
Chris Valls, Tammy Lynn Powers, Betts, Travis Tewitt, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Magic Man, Chris Sanders, Christopher Rex. Kind of a Chris trifecta.
Close.
One's a Christopher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of messes it all up.
We'd have to ask him if he goes by that or not.
We'd need a judge's ruling. Yeah. Heather Sachs, Jason Weesey, O Geekdom, Invasion of the Remake, Vertige 314, David Rojas, Spoiler Peace Theater, Mike, and Oscar, Dissect That Film, Ronnie Castle, Feelin' Film, Nostalgia Cast, Matt Naglia, Binge Movies, In Session Film, Ryan Terry, and Geek to Me Radio. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate it. And finally, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/RealSpoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and we like you extra.
It's true. Yeah. And the Christmas stuff is done.
Oh.
It's in the can, at least.
Yeah, well, that's true. We've recorded it.
Last week, we released our penultimate episode of Holiday Horror, which was Violent Night.
That's correct.
Very timely. Yes. And sorry about, I know you guys gave that to me so far in advance.
We did
before
so
the holidays.
Far in advance. We just, you know, we're trying to be proactive.
And so we recorded the very, very final of at least this Holiday Horror.
Black Christmas.
I don't know how early Matt likes to gear up for the next Holiday Horror.
As early as possible.
Yeah. You should have just left him in the can at this point.
I know. Just let
really
him sit there.
On top of your game, you know.
No, this is when they liked them released, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I guess let's dig in to Scream 6.
So, I honestly, I do think, after watching this one, there are so many horror franchises that have made it to number six. Mm-hmm. By the time you get to number six, you're like, Jesus.
Yeah.
All right. Like, you know, let's pick up the pace a little bit, or what are we doing?
But this is a little different, too.
This is
different.
Because
of the reboot, like a sequel type thing.
So that's interesting. Like, it is, five was the requel,
yeah.
But it also stayed, like, in, it didn't negate anything.
Right.
It didn't negate 1, 2, 3, or 4.
Right, it's not a reboot, and it's not even a soft reboot, it's a requel. It literally is
a requel.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
When we say requels, though, they usually with these, they're going from, like, you know, Halloween 78
right.
to 2018.
To,
and there's nothing, we're going to forget about everything else. This franchise isn't doing that. This is like, we're going to sort of do a requel, but we're going to stick with our continuity. I think the Scream franchise is...
Well, I think most requels stick, like Jurassic Park's a requel, and it picks up with...
I guess that's
a
true.
New cast, but it's still, it doesn't, it's not a remake, like it's still living
or
in
straight
that
up reboot.
Same world as the original.
Yeah.
And the legacy characters show up. And
yeah.
You know. I don't know. I don't know if I would characterize it as a requel because it does continue with the, especially with five, the same legacy cast. It's there's the timeline's not been retconned in any way. So I don't know if I would. I mean, it was a, you know, displaced by many years. I think to be a requel, in my opinion, is that there's an attempt to remake. And I don't see an attempt in Scream 5 to remake anything as much as I do to perhaps revive. And so I guess maybe if we're saying it's like a revive sequel, but I don't see.
Okay.
Typically when I use that term, I'm using it for remake, not revive. But I suppose you could use it either way.
It's like reviving the franchise.
They define it in 5, though, right? Doesn't one of the characters
say it's
a requel?
Yeah, I mean, they talk about being a requel. And it, I mean, not to go against what the professor says.
No.
But I do kind of think, like, it is. I mean, you've got the love interest. Spoilers for Scream 5.
Yeah.
It does kind of
the
mirror.
Love interest is the killer. The whole end set of the movie ends up in Randy's house or in Stu's house.
Yeah,
just like the first, just like the first one.
The internet kind of defines it as like you're revisiting this franchise. It's continuing in that world, but it's not a direct sequel to the.
Because you got new characters, right?
Right. So like, it's not a direct sequel that picks up right where the last one left off. You
like
know?
Jurassic That's World fair. Lives in that world, but right. Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard are the stars. But then you pull in the old cast, which they didn't do right away. But like this one, Sydney was in 5.
Sydney
like,
was
I would
in
think
5.
Creed is a requel.
I could under-
yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Lives in the world of Rocky, but it's not really following Rocky. But Rocky's in it.
Yeah.
You know?
But it kind of like the story beats do kind of follow. They're not completely similar, but that first Creed movie we talked about is very much feels like an art house movie. And you've got the underdog and he loses his first match. I mean, it is a very similar.
I think so.
It's a like I would call it a soft reboot. It's a, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But this franchise, I think, is the most consistently good from 1 to 6, which I think is almost impossible to do.
Yeah.
I think you look at any other horror franchises, you get one or two really good ones in the beginning, and then there's like a fall off, and they kind of pick back up. But by the time we get to 6, it's like, well, now we're in Manhattan, and now we've got Michael is going to have sex with his niece and have a baby. It's just like, what are we doing? Like, this is insane. Where this one doesn't feel that way.
I don't know, Joe. I did not like this movie.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So I have a hard time seeing, is it bad? It's not bad.
It's
so
not
I'm
bad,
willing
but
to,
it's
I'm willing to meet
the
you halfway in that it's not bad. So I would say, in my opinion, more accurately, it's the most consistently not bad franchise.
It hasn't jumped the shark.
That's fair. That's also fair, right?
That's interesting. I didn't know where we would all land, and Tom just said it's the weakest. Not
I think
bad, but the weakest.
I don't think it's a bad movie either, but I definitely think it's the weakest.
I think it's probably the next to weakest. I do think it's toward the end, too.
Yeah.
And it's the fifth.
Is it even trying to be scary anymore? Like, there was not one scary moment.
But that's just it, Tom.
I think the opening
I don't think that these movies have ever been scary, right?
I don't, like that first 13 minutes of
that's true.
The original Scream is
the opening the first one. But
it's brilliant.
Of these movies become after the first one, even the first one. They're Scooby Doo movies,
kind of comedy.
Yeah, they're Scooby Doo movies.
Oh yeah,
you know. And
I think that's where this one kind of fails. It's neither scary. but it's also not funny.
Yeah.
And so
it
wants to be funny. That's why it comes down to just poor writing. And I know these guys did a great job with Ready or Not. So I don't know where the hell their brains were.
And Scream 5.
It's the same guys. So we like their work. Mm-hmm. It's not, I mean, we're fans of these guys. And again, it's not a bad movie, but it just didn't capture the same spark. I'm telling you, because for me, my rankings, and I don't usually like to rank stuff, but if I were to just throw it out, I'd be like, Scream, the original, is the mm-hmm. best. And then I tend to go Scream 5. Like, I love that Scream 5.
I'm 4. I'm 1, 4, 2... 5, 3, 6.
Okay.
1, 4, 2, 5, 3, 6. Yeah.
You like the old stuff.
Well, I am. I'm 1, 4, 5. Yeah. 6, 2, 3.
Okay.
And I don't care enough.
But you still, yeah. So you still really like this movie, but you put it 4th.
Yeah, but I mean, so, like.
But isn't that interesting, though?
But like, I also think that Scream 5 and Scream 4 are both pretty great.
Okay.
Compared, you know.
Yeah, I love that you bring that up, Joe. I don't know why 4 gets on
I don't
so
know either.
Often. And because it's excellently written.
Yes.
And
it's better than 3. I don't know how people put it.
It feels like it's channeling the original Scream energy. Now it's, and I don't even think Wes Craven himself was under the delusion of Kevin Williamson that anything was going to top the first one, but it does feel right in that same vein as 1. And I when I ask people why they don't like it, nobody can give me a definitive reason.
I can give all
kinds of reasons why it works well, but I'm hard pressed to find people who can define why they don't like it other than they cite the acting, but they don't, but I don't know. So please enlighten me.
It came out at the wrong time.
Really?
It came out in the wrong spot in the life cycle. It was too far away from the original.
Okay.
The original run to feel like, oh, cool, it's time for a new one. But it wasn't far enough away
for nostalgia
to kick in.
Okay.
So when it came out, it just kind of felt like, really? We're doing this? I mean, I remember going to the screening for Scream 4 and being like, really? We're doing this? And then leaving going, holy God, they made a good movie.
Yeah.
I did not anticipate that. Like, and when it came out and kind of tanked and got pretty mediocre reviews, I mean, I looked around like, what did you guys want from a Scream movie? Like, it did all the things, and it did them well. Like, I was really confused, like Ryan, that movie was received so tepidly.
No, I think that movie was fantastic.
Because I was just like, these aren't my jam, right?
Right,
and so
right.
I was like, that movie was a lot of fun. It did everything you wanted a Scream movie to do, and it wasn't rewriting the past to make it make sense. It's still, like, it's always been very good, even if the premises of these movies are so ridiculously convoluted.
Sure.
But they don't, but normally you get a movie like the Halloween franchise and they're ridiculously convoluted and they ignore what came before.
Correct.
Where at least this movie, they've always worked to not completely write off what came before.
4 is almost the first requel you've got Dewey and you've got Gale and you've got Sid, but they bring in a whole new cast of characters.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, that was, I think, the plan was, like, they were setting it up, and then these new ones are going to take over, and we don't have to write big checks to the legacy people anymore.
You don't have to write a big check.
I think it's been a couple of years since I've rewatched it, but I seem to remember it commenting on, was it reboots?
It was remakes and reboots.
Oh, it was remakes. Okay, yeah. that one, it was remakes. And so, I can see that, Tom. That does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think,
because,
like I said, it just came out at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Like, people weren't ready for it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in those movies now, I mean, we talk about how there's not a bad Scream movie, but that isn't how they used to be viewed. I remember people saying the Scream sequels were bad for 3 and 4. That is how they were viewed. But now
3 3 is an outlier only because there was the bangs. But they had a plan. They had a night and then the script leaked.
Yeah.
So then they had to figure all that out. And then Columbine happens, and then they have to go back in. So if you watch Scream 3, I mean, it's basically PG-13.
Yeah,
like you could
that's
make
right.
a case for it because they had to take all of the all the violence out,
right?
All the on-screen violence, I guess.
I like 3, but I think it's the weakest of the franchise.
It is.
And I think like in that one, like 3 of them just died from high cholesterol.
Correct. Like, yeah. Right. It was. They just were like just write
a big
it in
push
there
to you know get the kids healthier in
right,
school.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's exactly.
So
right.
talking about this one though, so. for me, what they get right. That opening, it's great. We're doing something really interesting here.
There are good scenes in this movie. The opening.
I think the opening's fantastic.
The bodega scene, the subway.
Mm-hmm. But I was so excited in the opening of this movie because I'm like, we're doing something weird here. And I love how they trick you with the openings in all the movies, right? See, but this was like...
What they should have done with this movie, this is what I think they should have done, is that opening scene, and they show you Ghostface. That should have been the movie.
Just keep going with it.
Now and we're going to flip it to where it's like Columbo. Mm-hmm. Like, we know who the killer is.
Yeah.
How are they going to figure out who the killer is?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I thought we were going to live the whole movie knowing the killer, and the characters have to figure it out. That's what I'm saying. There was like a brilliant, this is so weird and different from Scream movies, even and they didn't go with it.
Even to the point where... So we'll just say Samara Weaving is the Janet Leigh of this, the Drew Barrymore of this.
If you've seen Ready or Not, she's the final girl. She's the main character of that movie.
She's also in The Babysitter, which if you
haven't seen, The Babysitter's great.
Also fantastic.
Yeah.
Was she the baby or the sitter?
She was the babe.
She was the babysitter.
She's the babysitter. So, you know, it's the same setup where she's on like a Tinder date. Guy's, you know, it's very cute and funny where he's like, I'm so sorry, I get lost. She ends.
Well, at this point, I'm like, this guy sounds like an idiot. Like, would you really hang on to that date for that long if he's like that long?
I don't know how long she's waited, but if she's waited at the lengths that I've waited, I would go out with it. I would at least...
Would you walk down a dark New York alley?
Here's what you're not factoring into the equation.
She's Samara Weaving.
She's Samara Weaving.
No offense to you, but not many people are Samara Weaving.
Right. Like, Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie is Samara Weaving. But...
She is in the one percentile.
Yeah, right.
She does not need to wait to get the D.
When it's going on and on and on, and she is Samara Weaving, I'm going like, this is... dumb. Yeah. Like,
I don't disagree with you, but I was just at this point in this movie when Samara Weaving is the first actress you see, we're like, well, we know what's going to happen to her. Yeah. And it is, I think this is, it's
do they
a
always
great...
die in the intro? Is it every single movie?
Well, I think the, you know, with Scream, obviously it was the stunt casting.
It was always stunt.
The
casting.
Movie theater, they die.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Do they always?
Yeah. Cause it's Jada Pinkett and Omar Epps.
Yeah. What's three?
What is three?
Is it a movie? Is that when they do a they're watching?
Maybe, but because four
is the one that twists the.
It does the. We see like a two whatever. It's,
that's a great intro. That four.
Four
does.
Is Anna Paquin and Kristen Bell.
But they're watching a movie.
But yes.
It's like they're watching Stab 3 or they're watching one of the Stab movies. Right. Like they're having a slumber party or something.
And so that's what this one kind of tries to pull the like meta within.
And even 5 does it, right? You kind of think that Jenna Ortega's dead at the beginning of 5. Like,
and that was where they pull the rug out from under you. And that's the first one where the person doesn't die.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's also what I also appreciate about this opening scene is it really, aside from, I love the bait and switch. I think it could have easily been like a Columbo episode, Tom. I don't know if Kevin's ever told you this, but I am a huge Columbo fan myself.
Have you watched Poker Face?
It's so good.
No, I haven't seen Poker Face.
That's fantastic.
You gotta watch Poker Face.
It is
so good.
It's the most on Peacock.
Peacock. That's the Ryan Johnson.
So good.
I will check it out. Because what I love about Columbo is we generally knew who it was at the beginning, or even early on, or it was so obvious. It's like, well, I know that's who it is. But the fun was, how is he going to trip them up?
Right.
And they successfully did it for what was it, like 12 seasons?
They had seven seasons in the 70s. Now, they were short seasons, so because it was part of NBC's murder mystery wheel.
So good.
Where every Sunday you would get a different murder mystery. So it would rotate. It would be like a Columbo, and then the next week it would be like McMillan and Wife, and then I think McCloud. And
Were they movie length?
Yeah. They were like made for TV movies. And so, which is why Columbo episodes didn't pop up in syndication for years, is because they were weird times. And they weren't consistent. There are some that are like, without commercials, are like 65 minutes. Mm-hmm. There are some that clock in at like an hour and 40 or an hour and 50. Mm-hmm. So,
and they came back in the 90s?
So they bring them back in like the early 90s. Maybe there's an 89 one. And it runs all the way up until like 2004.
Are they all on Peacock?
I don't know about the new
on I think there's like the older ones are on Amazon, and then the one starting with the I guess late 80s or early 90s, those are on Peacock because that's how
I think you got that
that's
flipped.
How I watched them.
Yeah, but I just
so however around, many
yeah.
years it was, they yeah. consistently kept it interesting, even though you knew who it was. And I feel that's a great point because this it's like this kind of wanted to be that because there yeah. is that there. I mean, there's that whodunit. You know, at least like whodunit adjacency in this yeah. one, but I don't think they leaned into it heavily enough. But it's like they wanted to, and I wonder if they were just concerned because whodunits, even though like Knives Out and Glass Onion are, and even you know Nile and what and the Murder on the Orient Express is making them a little more popular. Maybe they were just worried that they weren't popular enough to really lean into that.
Yeah.
Lean into that whodunit. But what else? But the other thing I appreciate about the opening is it really sets the tone because there is this running commentary, albeit not always very strong, but there is this running commentary on film studies, which caught my attention
right
away.
Because
Samara Weaving is just like, oh my gosh, that's me, and we do refer back to that, and so I appreciate what it has to say on film studies, on horror film studies, and then the academic side of just studying these films, and I like that it's a setup which they do follow through on. They touch on it throughout the rest of the movie.
So let's talk about what they do. So yeah. the caller lure, the guy that's on the date lures her out to the alley because he's like, I'm walking through the alley, can you see me, I'm waving. She's like, I don't see anybody, and then Ghostface jumps out,
right.
kills her.
I do like where she said where the Ghostface is like, you teach horror at a school, yeah. and yeah. you just walk down a dark alley at night.
Yeah.
And she's, and of course, yeah, Ghostface jumps out and just obliterates her.
But this is the first time we've ever seen Ghostface reveal himself.
Yes,
and
it's always
right
the,
up top.
Your heroine is yeah. usually the one that reveals.
Yeah, and this is so exciting to me. I'm just
yeah.
like,
you're not wrong,
and it still is an exciting intro because it. Bait and switch and all that stuff, but mm-hmm. like I thought we are on trajectory for a Scream movie we've never seen, and come to find out we're watching a Scream movie that we've seen.
If we're gonna call the first one a requel of Scream 1, this is a requel of Scream 2.
That's what I'm saying, and I'm wondering if they are going to if the same team continues, I wonder if they ever will really do a bait or switch, or are we on track for a 5 is 1 6 is
right.
2. Are we going to redo 3?
I
don't think
so. Are
they going
to
be making a movie about these characters? You know, I just wonder.
They will not be making a movie. This is my prediction. It will be a true
Screaming.
Crime podcast.
Oh,
good.
Yeah.
Interesting. But so we find out. So it's Tony Revolori who plays Flash Thompson in the
yes.
new Spider-Man movies. He's in the Grand Budapest Hotel. You know him. So
he plays the hotel.
Yeah,
that's right.
He was. And so he goes back to his apartment, and you find out that he's some kind of stab fanatic. The movies within
well, I think
a movie.
I think he's a horror fanatic. He definitely has like
he's got
the masks
and the poster of Stab.
And
but
I
if
think
you look
he's
around
her
his
student. It's not.
He's
I don't
definitely
think
her student.
Well, no, he like, is. I'm just saying.
Oh, that's right.
We don't know that
film
yet.
Professor.
Yeah, but we see the Stab poster. We see a couple of Ghostface masks. We see the costume up there. So like he's got this whole little shrine. And he's talking to his roommate, and he's like, "Where are you?"
You think that's his roommate? I thought it was boyfriend.
Yeah,
could be. Yeah, I mean, it definitely could be. But they still live in the same place.
Sure,
whatever.
Sure.
So he's calling, not to dismiss it, but I'm just saying they don't like.
I don't know that they really double down.
Make
on it
clear make a
one
point
way.
Exactly.
I ultimately don't think it matters.
Got to tell you,
much.
It doesn't. Yeah.
No. Well, nah, not for long at all. So he's talking to him, and he's like, "You start to get the idea. Like, yeah, they're planning this. They do this together. You know." He says he has blue balls for killing. He's like,
"Well, he's like, I had. Yeah, that's why he killed Samara Weaving. Is like, I just couldn't hold it in anymore." And there is a scene to Tom's point where this looked like it was going to be a Columbo thing. Mm-hmm. This character bumps into Jenna Ortega, like when he's walking back to the dorm, and he's like, "Hey, is your sister going to be there at this party?" And she was like, "I don't know, man. You
good
call
point.
Her."
And that's what was also so exciting.
So they're
is
leading
you see the
up
killer,
that, yeah.
and the victim, the supposed, you know,
the final goal from part five,
and they don't, you know, address anything. It's not when he's trying to kill her. It's
nope.
like, is he going to blend into this friend group? And so that is so exciting.
Yeah,
but come to find out,
guess what? They do that anyway.
Yeah, but the partner ends up doing the voice modulator, and he's like, "Don't do that. That's creepy or whatever." He's like, "I've got to stay in character to study whatever."
Right, right.
So they're talking. He's admitting what he did. He opens up the fridge,
and there's his boy. There's
the
boyfriend
the roommate of whatever.
Got Green Lantern.
He did get well. He got Green Lantern girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. I guess they were dating.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how he confirmed it.
Yes, that's right.
And so Ghostface then pops out and kills him. So
and now we
get
the title yeah. card.
But they will. Do set up a lot of interesting things though, because we get the shrine to the Stab movies. Later on, we get some hints dropped about who this character was and that they were into collecting Stab things and all this. So
I'm just gonna get this out of the way now. I thought it was gonna be Stu. Like, that's where I thought we were going to.
That's what I thought, and I was too, like, and I wish they did it. I wish they just went simple and did it.
I told my sister and I, like, this is kind of, kind of our thing. Like, okay. This is one of the things that we bonded over as we were getting older.
I'm glad it's not dating, as we it talked about in the last episode. No. There was that promise made.
That was on the Patreon. Don't give it away.
Oh, that was on the Patreon? Yes. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. That was a weird reference. You're like, what?
Yeah. I was like, we both think very highly of Matthew Lillard. I think he gives one of the just the most bonkers and best performances of this franchise.
Oh, he's so good.
He's
in the first
so
one,
good.
Man.
He's so good.
He actually, he's a great Shaggy.
They shouldn't have screwed him over the way that they did.
They should not have.
No, yeah, and like you, Kevin, I also thought it was going to be, and Joe, I think you said the same thing. I thought it was going to be Stu, and I feel it would have been a better movie had it been Stu, because we even kind of hint at, because there's that the fan theory.
Well,
that
it was a fan
he is still alive. He may be disfigured from the TV, but still alive. And
but that's why they did it, Ryan. That's I wish they followed through too, but I'm saying is that thought it was going to be him.
I feel like this script was a choose your own adventure.
I don't disagree at all.
They wrote it in a way that it could have been the Bailey clan or it could have been Stu, and it was like, oh, we can't get Matthew Lillard, then it's the Bailey.
You really can't. You can do.
It could work either way.
It's interesting because with this movie, because of the ghost face nature, you really can say it was anybody until the reveal.
You can't say it was anybody.
Not anybody.
When the movie tries to make you think it was Kirby, I was like, well, was Ghostface 3'11"?
It's not Kirby.
One of the killers is similar in stature.
Five, the ghost face that kills Dewey.
They do. That is a weird
is the girl. Yeah. And it's like,
doesn't
I
make
don't
any
think
sense.
That girl was standing over
was
Dewey.
She wearing stilts?
Yeah.
But there is one of the killers in this. Like, yeah. I mean, I think we could at least spoil at this point. There's three killers.
There's three killers.
Which is the, like, it's different. I mean,
it is different.
They went the other direction.
And I got to tell you, the Dermot Mulroney?
Yeah.
Yes.
Dylan McDermott.
Dermot McRib.
He's
McRibbed for your pleasure.
Very good. Yeah. He is. I feel like he is trying to do like Matthew Lillard. Like he's channeling that manic, and it is not good.
Really? I don't know.
I feel like he didn't know if he was the killer until the end because like there are scenes where I think like, oh, this guy's crazy, and then there are other scenes where he plays it so normal,
right?
That like it reminded me of in American Psycho.
Yeah.
When is it Willem Dafoe that's the detective that's after him?
Yeah.
And they told him they would film all the scenes twice. One where he knew they were like, play it like you know he's the killer.
Okay.
And now play it like you don't. And then they would cut back and they would just kind of mix and match.
Donald Pleasanced it.
And so like when you watch the movie, like his performance kind of like toggles back and forth.
Okay.
Even within scenes. Sometimes.
That's a weird movie too.
Yeah. Perhaps they were overly concerned with wanting to keep us from figuring it out. And so there were so many red herrings that the focus was on, well, how can we throw people off? And they threw people off so much that they forgot, well, where were we going in the first place? Because towards in the third act, which is very weak, there's all these hard right turns.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, we painted ourselves into a corner and now we have to get ourselves out. And so we have almost, I would say it doesn't meet all the quote requirements or conventions for Deus Ex Machina, but it kind of leans, it goes in that direction because they didn't want us to figure it out. And I appreciate that, but I think that they lean too much into throwing people off.
When you find out the answer, there are things that don't make sense anymore.
Right.
Right. Like, so when floppy hair, nice guy,
sure,
is on the subway with Mindy.
His name's Ethan, the character.
Okay. Yeah. Ethan. When Ethan is on the subway with Mindy and she gets attacked.
Correct.
And why is he pulling her off of the subway and screaming for 911? Why doesn't he just leave?
Well, I think,
like, I mean, if the whole thing
because
is
the audience had to be tricked, Tom.
Right? Exactly, yeah. Because the audience had to be tricked. It was done for the viewer. It makes no sense within the context of the story.
Yeah,
well, right.
That, ultimately,
but hey, that was his best acting. He acted better as Ghostface trying to throw people off by keeping the victim alive than his acting in
post Ghostface.
Yes,
yeah. I mean, there's Postface.
Postface.
Yeah, there's
Postface Malone.
There's a lot of things like so. With this movie, another spoiler is that the core four, as they're dubbed in this movie by one of
core
the twins,
four.
They all survive.
Right.
And so it doesn't really make sense because why would the Ghostface not kill
because
them all
that,
the way?
That's,
well,
that's
so
what
they stab
happens.
Everyone
we're,
so
we're
many
afraid.
Times. It's,
well, they I think the Mindy's brother.
Yes.
Chad.
You know that's Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son?
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh,
I
didn't know
that.
That.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. But I don't think he was supposed to live.
I think
whenever you see a movie like this and someone gets brought in on a stretcher
to
a different crime scene, like, well, that's it's like that was tacked on. They were like, on second thought, leave that one alive.
That's the Dewey thing, right?
And that's one of the issues I take with this. And this is it's not just Scream 6. It's applicable to other horror films. I'd say mainly those that are either slasher or maybe slasher adjacent, is that we used to not be afraid to kill off our central characters because they even talk about it. They talk about killing off legacy characters and what have you. What's the problem with that I take with a lot of quote, we'll call it postmodern horror, is our central characters are somehow superheroes. And that's why I'm not a big Jenna Ortega fan, at least not in the Scream series. And I know that's, I'm the outlier because everybody else seems to love her. I don't know if it's her character or if it's her, but what she brings to Scream, I don't like because she's treated like a superhero and her sister's they're all treated like superheroes. And even though, yes, they might get stabbed, that were never really concerned for their life, whereas horror films from the 80s and from the 90s and even the earlier Scream movies, like you're genuinely concerned for everybody's life, like nobody is safe. And then you get to this one, it's just like, oh, well, we're afraid to bloody our central characters.
In that last scene when they set up the kill box, like I forget which one, but the one of the two sisters, I mean, she straight up gets stabbed in the stomach.
Yeah.
And then she just pulls the knife out and she's at the end.
Well, Kirby gets stabbed in the
They're sitting there talking on the steps.
Right.
And I was like, you got stabbed.
But not only, it's not even that Mindy.
And you're just sitting there having a casual conversation.
But Kirby got stabbed in the stomach and then she's like hanging out.
I can accept that only because we've seen people get stabbed in like the side. And be okay.
But the first time we saw Kirby get stabbed in the stomach, you thought she was dead because it was a serious wound.
And he purposefully stabbed her in the exact same spot.
Correct.
So,
It's just, it's the most egregious in this film with people surviving.
The last half of this, the ending of this movie is the weakest part.
And I think they're scared because they kept, for the first four movies, they kept the trio alive. And we said, these movies are all good, they're not bad, right? Like this is the best horror run, and they kept the characters, and I think they are so scared to kill off any of these because like we can keep doing this with these, they love them all.
But then they say things like when these movies happen, it's like legacy characters are killed off, and although I'm glad that did not come to complete fruition.
But yeah, they did the same thing with Gale. They didn't kill her because they...
But then it doesn't... Oh, you just told me this is what was supposed to happen and this is what always happens. And then to the degree at which the characters were talking about it, well, it didn't happen. So it's a setup that has no payoff. Although what they do with our legacy characters in this one, I don't dislike. But you set up something that there's no payoff.
You know what I don't like? What I don't like with
racism.
This, thank you. That is one. Another thing I don't like, nothing. Okay.
Homophobia.
Yep. Bingo. Okay. But in this movie, what I really, really don't like is that they kind of take Gale's character growth and throw it away.
A little bit.
Because Gale is not supposed to be that person anymore. We like her now. She's not, you know, she's grown throughout the movies. And now when she walks up and she's like Channel 5, whatever,
and
I'm like, that's a joke, right?
She's wearing like an outfit that's very similar.
She's literally the Gale that people
Another little thing that bothered me in this, because you're right. But also, they and then Gail and the sisters go off and they have this conversation while the media over
waiting
is just completely ignoring them. And I was like, there would be cameras filming all
vultures,
of this.
Vultures all over it. Microphones in their face, all of it.
Yeah.
That scene too. I don't like the fact that Tara punched Gail, because I like how she missed the first one.
That's great.
And I think it would have been much better if she missed the second one, because then it's just like, you're setting this character up to be a superhero. I don't need my final girls as superheroes. I like them as human and flawed. They make mistakes. They nearly die. They, you know, may even cause other people to die. But then everything she sets out to do, it's always in her favor. And I don't think that she should have been able to hit Gail. I think it should have been the first swing, and that's it.
Gail should have been in the position to get hit and undermine all the growth, and that we like Gail, and these ones have been through this together, through that last one, and you feel like Gail is a different person. And meanwhile, what spurs this is you find out she wrote another book, just like she wrote about Sydney and why she hated her in the first
one. To remain relevant, and I'm not going to go into details of the conversation Kevin and I had earlier this week, but I like how there are deep moments in this movie, and I love when horror films, they do tap into our most primal fears, and those most primal fears aren't always, you know, life or death. You know, sometimes they can be existential, which can be debilitating or paralyzing, and they bring something up which I personally struggle with, which is
turning down book deals.
Was trying to remain relevant. And I really feel for Gail in that moment. And I love her reaction. She says nothing, but there's a look in her face where it's just like, you know, that is my fear, is this is all I have. And if I don't have this, you know, I go back to the
Channel 5 news.
Channel 5, you know, 10 o'clock news or whatever. And I personally struggle with those same things. And so I may express them differently, but that fear is really there. And I think that fear for Gail is genuine. And I like that moment. We don't really revisit it, though. And so we're setting up something that could be really impactful. Oh, there's no follow-up, but I still like.
No, and they're just good, and they want to save her.
What happens is she gets punched in the face, and then she goes back to being the Gail from 5.
Right.
Right,
because of the head trauma.
That's exactly, yeah. Ryan, I agree. I love the fact that we get that same setup from Scream 1. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, in that one, Neve Campbell does knock out Gail Weathers. But I love the fact that in this one, Gail ducks. And she's like, been here,
just leave
that.
It at that.
And I think that's a great scene. I also, one of the issues I did have with this is, as much as I loved the idea of Ghost Billy kind of messing with our main character, I did not need it in this one.
Or do something with it.
Yeah. Or turn her into the killer.
I don't feel like they're going to do it, so they maybe should just stop.
Well, here's the problem, is they do kind of the same ending in 5 and 6, right? Yes. Like, where you think she's going to be the killer at the end
of
5.
She gets all stabby.
And the end of this one, it's the same thing. And it's just like, as much as I enjoy seeing a de-aged Skeet Ulrich, you can't go back to that well again, you know? Yeah. And the other thing that I think Kirby in Scream 4
is a different person.
Is a different, which is fair, right? She's been through some between 4 and now, right? And I understand.
And she's
also
been through officer training, and
she's a different person.
And she's not a high school kid anymore. Yeah.
But like, there is a, I know this is, there's a lightness to her in 4 that I was hoping was going to come back.
I have a hard time buying her as an FBI officer.
I have a hard time. Yes, thank you. I don't buy her in this role. And I also, I like Kirby's character in 4.
Kirby's wonderful in 4.
She's a fan favorite.
It's not, even with all that training, you're still a completely different person, and I just don't buy you in this role.
I don't know why you bring back Kirby if you're not going to bring back the same person.
But I also don't want to... Hayden Panettiere in real life has been through some stuff, and this was her first acting gig
in 4 years.
And I think even the writers and directors, the Radio Silence guys, were like, man, it took us forever to find her just because she doesn't have an agent. So like,
I don't know what
she had, some addiction issues, but she was also in a pretty toxic relationship that, you know, I think can have an effect on anybody.
Sure. I just don't, you know.
Yeah. So she kind of dropped out of the spotlight.
I know for
a
Hero,
while
she was on that show Nashville.
Yes.
And then I started to watch Nashville. It just didn't do it for me, but
And she would pop up every once in a while on things. And then Scream 4 was kind of like, oh, yeah. Like, this gal's great. And then
I thought Scream 4 was
Scream 4 was when she was
That's
popular.
When she was hot. Yeah. She was that. They cast her off
Heroes?
They cast her off the success of Heroes. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And then she kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
But so, no, I'm not trying to be dismissive to any of that or whatever. It's just you bring back fan favorite Kirby, who everyone's like, oh, well, we never saw that she was dead or whatever. And
but we know that. So I will say, we know she's not dead because in 5, when they're watching
Easter eggs.
Yes.
But they thought she wasn't dead maybe before 5.
Then
5 proved
confirmed
that
it,
based on the fans that love her. And then they bring her back.
We know that they didn't get Neve Campbell. Well, I think the Radio Silence guys wanted Neve Campbell back. And the producers weren't going
to
budge.
Is similar to Creed in that the creative team wanted it, but the people that controlled the strings did not.
And
you can tell because
they give her a great line.
They said, we're going to let Sydney have her happy ending. And I mean, I don't believe that for a second. If they can reach a deal, she'll be back in the next one. But
see, I actually thought that it could have been, I don't know at what point I thought this in the movie, but could the whole, dispute overpay have been just like the most well thought out and executed publicity stunt?
That would have been cool.
And nobody would have seen that coming. Like, I thought that's like, could that have been? And then
that would
have been genius.
It would have been genius, but they would have need to have done it in a different manner. Having it be about like you're not paying women properly, that's some really bad PR.
If you didn't make it about that issue, and it was just like we couldn't reach an agreement or whatever, and they kept it under wraps, and they pull it off, they do it well. But the other thing about this movie that I think is kind of obvious, and not that they never have telegraphed anything, but I've never remembered a movie where the Dermot Mulroney character, right? Like they introduce him and he's a cop, right? And he's got Tara, or is it Sam's roommate? I don't know if they all live together, but
I think they all live together.
Okay. So the roommates, they've got, is the daughter of the cop.
Right.
And then they bring the cop in a way that seemed very inorganic to me, to where it's like, well, this is a police officer and, you know, he's on the case and then his daughter's involved, so he's off the case. And then he joins the friend group in a way where I'm like, I just don't think any other police officer
This is what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
Is we're introduced to the roommate, the girl, and she talks about losing her brother.
What was her name?
Quinn,
I'm sorry. Okay.
She talks about losing her brother.
Yeah.
And I was like, losing your brother, huh?
Yeah.
Then your dad's here as well.
Interesting.
And your dad, you know, we're talking about losing a brother and we're mentioning Stu Mocker. And I was like, if we're going to do a requel to Scream 2, who's the killer in that one? Billy Loomis's mom is the killer.
If
we pull this off and the end reveal is that Stu is alive. And his dad is there to get revenge on the daughter of the guy that corrupted his son and ended up killing his son.
Yeah. That would have tied in, right?
Like, I'm in.
That's
but
an interesting theory to think she's connected to Stu rather than she's ended up being connected to Richie. It's similar, but it could have led into
the reveal. Here's the final reveal is that nerdy, quirky guy and roommate who we think is dead, surprisingly not dead, and Dylan McDermott, their son and brother was Richie, Randy Quaid and Meg Ryan's son. What's his name?
Oh, Jack Quaid.
Jack Quaid.
Which, he voices Boimler on Star Trek Lower Decks.
He's also Huey on The Boys.
He's great, and he was great in Scream 5.
Yep.
He's awesome. So the reveal, this is the most Scooby-Doo ending of any of these movies, and the reveal that it was more family members of them, I'm like, okay, so Scream 7, the grandparents are going to come in and get their revenge. It's so ridiculous. So I mean,
that's going to be The Visit. It's going to be a cross between Scream and The
But just
and
go
the
back
visit.
And think that like the police detective gets a job in New York, that his son was a serial killer.
Right.
And they hire, I mean, they have to know, right?
No, like because he changes his name.
Okay. So,
but I will say, as far as background checks go,
you would
there's a lot involved.
That's what I'm saying.
Think the police department would know how to do a background check, and it's New York City. It's not correct. Like he's in Mayberry. Podunk.
He's not in Woodsboro.
So right. Tara goes to school in New York. She gets out of Woodsboro. Sam follows her. That's why she's there, and she's right. working two jobs just so she can watch over her sister. And they're all being very protective. The friend group, understandably, Chad's got a crush on her that comes to fruition during this movie. Mm-hmm. But so the police detective gets a job there, changes his name, but he's the dad of the serial killer. They can't figure it out. Then
his name is George Bailey, right?
Is that his name?
I'm almost positive.
Detective Bailey.
Was it George Bailey?
I'm almost
positive. Bailey's the last name. Did they give us his first name?
Let me look. Hold on. There's a crane in this.
Yeah.
Quinn Bailey. Crane is Samara Weaving. Her character is okay. Crane. Oh my gosh, where is he on this list?
But the sisters are carpenters.
Detective Bailey. Yeah. They don't give a first name on this. But
isn't it, that's from Psycho, right?
George Bailey. No, that's It's a Wonderful
Life. Isn't
there somebody in Psycho named with the last name Bailey?
No, the detective in there is Arbogast, Loomis, Crane, and Bates.
But Crane is the Psycho.
And Billy Loomis.
Marion Crane, and then whatever Samara Weaving is something Crane. I didn't look it up. But so the detective gets a job there. They miss that on the background check. Then when we're in the apartment and the core four are all being friendly or whatever, you've got the guy from She-Hulk is Sam's love interest, and he lives across the way. They're keeping it secret because, she doesn't want people to...
Because plot device.
Yeah, right. It's like, come on.
I also kind of love the therapist. When Sam finally tells him who she is, he's like,
nope,
this isn't going to work for me.
My pay grade.
No.
Get out.
So,
have you thought about BetterHelp?
Yeah.
So they're in the apartment having dinner or whatever.
No spoilers.
Quinn is promiscuous. She's in a three-way earlier in the movie. Like, there's two guys in the room. And
she's not promiscuous. She's sex positive.
Sex positive.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Sex positive.
She likes the D.
Yeah. So they hear noises coming from the other room. They're like, oh, she's just getting it on or whatever. But the boyfriend can see because she's got her window open and he's got his window open. He's looking in and she's like on the phone, supposedly, I guess, talking with her dad because it sounds like they're discussing the case.
No, dang it.
Yeah, because it's after a killer. Oh, she says something where I remember because I'm like, well, that's got to be her dad because it had something to do with a killer, a case, or evidence, or whatever. But then you see a
ghost. It's always best practice to discuss ongoing investigation.
An open homicide with your daughter.
Yeah, well, in this case, it makes sense.
And then I was very suspicious the way Ghostface showed up. And it's just like,
wait a minute.
I didn't know what to make of it, but it just seemed, this is just something a little off about it.
Well, but listen, this is the thing. So why on earth, none of them are trying to kill the boyfriend. None of them. So a Ghostface stands behind the killer, who obviously knows who Ghostface is, who one of the three Ghostface is,
right.
So that the boyfriend can come and maybe interject? They're trying to kill these people. Why would you even stage that so that the only person that sees it is the boyfriend?
The only thing I could think in that situation is they knew the boyfriend was going to be looking at Quinn, and they couldn't set up the scene. They couldn't get Quinn to, quote-unquote, die without there being some sort of production. So they put on a show for the boyfriend, then they throw Quinn through the door, they think that she's dead, and then they've got this murder scene. Now,
so let's say that's believable.
Ridiculous.
Let's say that's believable. So then Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah, Dylan McDermott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can come and swap the bodies.
Correct.
And then now his daughter is going to be living under, I guess, another one of their fancy secret identities. Like, if they pull off their plan, now the daughter is gone. Maybe the son is...
Well, the daughter can now operate freely as Ghostface.
Yeah.
Like, they think Quinn's dead, so that Quinn can do whatever she wants.
Oh, so now they want to continue? So this goes further than killing Sam? Now they just want to be professional Ghostfaces?
No, but I'm saying,
what is the plan here?
I don't disagree.
No, I get in the movie now she can because she's off the suspect list.
Sure.
I'm saying, what on earth is their long-term plan?
Yeah, so much of this movie is... Yeah. For the sake of the narrative and the viewer.
And so the audience can see these things.
It doesn't make any internal sense.
I want to know why they had to. I mean, I get, you can say that's a very weird plan,
but
though.
Also, maybe cast a different actress that
would
be believable as Ghostface killing
people. Well, I mean, that gal from Five
wasn't believable.
I know.
So
I believed her because I saw what she did once upon a time in Hollywood.
Oh, she got flamethrowered, right?
Yeah, she got flamethrowered in that and in Scream 5.
Yeah.
She got set on fire in both
movies. Which was very funny. Very funny homage. So I don't know. The whole setup was very convoluted, and mm-hmm. The reveal of it being the family and the three of them, and oh, we're actually the dad, the brother, and the sister. It's like, oh my gosh.
And I will say, we talked about this bodega scene. I think it's fantastic.
Very tension filled, very violent.
It's very not fun to see Ghostface with a shotgun. No. Like, I don't like that at all. No.
This is the most violent movie.
Like they said 15, a body count of 15.
They hold on the kills. They twist the knives.
Which they do in 5. Like, they ramped it up in 5, right? We see Dewey's guts spill all over the floor.
They ramped it up, but this was a different type.
Yes. And what I feel they increased the violence because somehow these writers and producers, directors, that you know, they think by simply increasing violence, it somehow makes it a better horror movie. And it's just like, no, more violence does not a great horror movie make.
Sure.
And I feel this amped up violence is really employed as a tool that just simply compensates for this vapid storytelling. Like,
other horror franchises? You up the kills because the story is...
Yeah. It's weird, though. They up the violence, but it's not any scarier.
No.
No,
like, no. And that's the thing.
Here's a moment of
just
violence.
For the thrills.
I don't think, for me personally, gore in a horror movie is not scary.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
Look at Black Christmas, the original Black Christmas. You don't even see anything.
Look at Halloween.
No.
Halloween, yeah. I mean, you barely see, you could, I've said it before, if you resubmitted that to the MPAA, that's a PG-13 movie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Without the boobs.
I think you might even be able to get away with the boobs.
I'm not saying you can't, but that's a... I don't know.
I think you could. You think because you could? It's not gratuitous, right? Like, it's the top of her nipples. You don't see her full boobs.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's not PJ Souls. You see PJ Souls.
It does.
When you freeze frame it. I mean.
Although Freddy has a notoriously low body count, all the way through the franchise. And then when we get to New Nightmare, not Remake Nightmare, New Nightmare, the really good one.
Yes.
Even the body count in that one, it's 94. So you think you're going to have increased violence. Even in that, when it hits.
I think it's only like 4.
There's not a huge body count.
No, I think it's the husband. It's the babysitter.
Yeah.
That might be it.
I do feel like in those other horror franchises, now this one still has clever stuff and these guys are very good. So I'm not saying, because this movie does not jump the shark like we said, as some other franchises have.
Yeah.
But I think traditionally, when you have a weak story and don't know what to do, but you got to have this popular killer, well, they up the crazy kills. Yeah. Right?
Well, I think it's also interesting. The MPAA is very, with flicks like this, is very interesting to me. Because you put this exact same movie out in 1984, this is going to get cut to...
Yeah,
MPAA would be like, you can't have that, you can't have that. So, but it is interesting to see where we are in 2023, where they're just like, hey, man, go for it.
Yeah,
you got that decapitated body in the freezer, and that head's going to bounce off the floor and roll across it?
Well, cool. Look at what these movies are doing, too, right? Like movies are back, and these horror movies are the ones that kept theaters in business during the pandemic. People showed up to see horror, and I think that they know that for their industry to continue to thrive and survive, that they have to be lenient. It's obviously we're more progressive now. I mean, things are different, but also it's like, you know, people are getting butts in seats. This is what they want to see.
Right.
So,
and we should say, before we wrap this up, we should say that, like, one of the, I do kind of like the idea that this guy, this version of Ghostface is killing people and leaving masks with the DNA.
Well, then you got to get me into my penultimate problem with the movie then. Okay. We've come to find out revealed that, like, those two film student guys were fanatics, and also his son was a huge fanatic. And I don't know, somehow there's some crossover with collecting and stuff. But Richie, Jack Quaid from 5, was this ultimate collector, and there was like a father and son bonding activity of getting all
He built like a shrine with all of the original stuff.
Because cops can be bribed. Every single cop and every single piece of evidence.
Okay, so now here's the thing. Wait.
I'll allow it.
but I mean,
Hold on. Now, all of that evidence, with the exception of the stuff that was in 3, all came from Woodsboro.
But man, so that's a lot of evidence.
You could make the case that they got one guy.
Woodsboro is a very small place.
Well, what do they
How
do?
Much are their evidence lockers?
That's true.
What do they do with evidence once a trial's over? Like, right?
Mostly it gets burned.
All these killers have been
dead.
Like, you don't even have
no
to
trial.
Worry. Yeah, you don't even have to worry about, like, well, what if there's an appeal?
They don't
or
keep
what
it
if
on
it
record for the DNA stuff? Or, like, don't they keep it?
I mean, you could. I mean, you
I
could
mean,
in
I
theory.
Think,
yeah.
I mean, if you know who the killer is and they're dead, you don't have to worry about appeals
and
or
you could
case
put,
getting
you
overturned.
You could put the killer's DNA on file.
Okay, so they could say it was destroyed and the cops were selling it off or
could
something.
Could have. With the exception of 3, which takes place in L.A., which, come on, it's the LAPD.
Let's be honest.
But I just, the fact, okay, this shrine had every single.
There's a lot.
Easter eggs. It was just Easter eggs, but it was a little weird.
I also just feel like that's a pretty expensive hobby.
Right.
Like,
right,
I would, you know what I mean? To, you know, like.
Which could, to me, would have led credence to Dilmert McNulty being like from Woodsboro. If we're saying that he was a cop from Woodsboro.
You got to think in this world, these murders would have to be as popular as
Zodiac.
As Zodiac, as John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, like, and
so, the most famous.
Yeah, yeah. So for one
person,
one 22-year-old to have every ghost face mask.
Right. And every knife with the blood still on it. And that's what I'm saying. It's
and
just,
the blood was still red.
And it was still red. Yeah, right.
except for Billy's shirt, which was brown.
Yeah. But,
so, like, there's just no
consistency. When they pull out the knife that's
bright red with the blood.
Yeah.
Like, I just couldn't. I'm sorry. To have that collection and have every
the
item.
The car in Greece wasn't that
way. Yeah. So that bothered me. And then Kirby. Okay. So we find out red herring to trick our cast to trick the audience. Dermot Mulroney calls up and says, hey, Kirby, there's no evidence of the FBI. She was let go. She got crazy about these killings. Don't trust her.
To me, that seems plausible, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. But we find out, no, she's really an upstanding member of the FBI, right? So she, okay, I know she's had trauma and all that trauma. Okay. I'm an FBI agent. Let's make a kill box and murder.
It does.
She's been following this case, right? She's pinning the charts. She's been tracking. The FBI is fully aware that she's the head of this investigation. Let's make a kill box. I just can't.
That's
dumb to me. That is bad writing. The FBI
I think this movie is really, really good.
Or
it's
at least
on
throw a line like, we're making a kill box, but we're just going to trap them.
Correct.
And then,
yeah, the fact that Kirby's the head investigator but willing to do a kill box.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, I think the first two-thirds of this are on par with 4 and 5. And then it takes a massive kick in the... when we get to that kill box.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
But I don't like, okay, the Scream movies have always been meta from Jamie Kennedy and doing the rules and stuff. I did not like that they retread against the rules again, and it's getting so meta. Yeah. They could just wink at the camera at this point.
Right.
Like,
it's like it's a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy at this point. Right. And it's
clever.
We still see remnants of the original image, but it's getting incredibly degraded at this point. And it ultimately doesn't deliver anything new. And
no, I agree.
Because it was fun in the fifth one, right? The twins doing the thing in the fifth one was clever and fun.
I think there was a bigger gap between 4 and 5. So
things had changed, you were hearing the new rules.
And it also felt fresh again. Like, oh, I remember this scene. This is fun. But now it's been, this time it's been, what,
1 year?
Year.
Last year. Last January.
There's no suspense.
Oh, wow.
There's no real suspense in the entire thing between the, it's in like 10th gear the whole movie.
Yeah,
so there's
no
emotional resets. There's no reason to feel tense about any of these situations because it starts off unpredictable. But then it winds up incredibly predictable, and I think the Scooby-Doo analogy is great.
Yeah. Yeah, it loses a lot of steam in that last act. And when the reveal happens, and I was like, are they all Stu's brother and sister? Like, is that where...
Oh, yeah.
They're all the same. Okay.
Were they Catholic?
Yeah,
how many people are in this family?
How many mockers are there? Come on. And then... But I do like the DNA. Like, I do kind of like the detective aspect, where they go to each crime, and they're like... Wait a minute. This has got Jill's DNA on it. This has got Mickey's DNA.
I like the idea of the detective story. I did like that they would leave every kill they left behind a ghost female.
And we're counting down to the last, but
the reveal of it and how they got
them. Which is why you think it's going to be Stu.
Correct.
Right. Because from the first, so maybe that was their head fake and it was supposed to be a clever, like, you thought it was Stu, but where it leaves you feeling like, oh, I wish it was Stu.
I wish it was Stu.
And maybe for the next, but now I feel like for the next one, bring him back.
I don't know. I think,
or is he just really dead? Because I had a question mark by him. They never they alluded to. There's those fan theories that he's alive,
still alive,
and there's a question mark.
Here's the thing: in 3, he was supposed to be the killer in 3
because he's in the background.
Well, he's in the background in 2 only because he was dating Neve Campbell at the time.
So he was on set.
But in 3, it was supposed to be Emily Mortimer's character and the guy, the other guy.
Okay, but that's what leaked, though.
That's what leaked. It's Emily Mortimer. And then Stu, I think, was supposed to be like the ringleader. He was supposed to be orchestrating the whole thing.
And then Kevin Williamson said he's dead.
Oh, he did say that?
That's what I heard, that it's confirmed he's dead. But I don't know. They can still... Yeah, okay, Williamson says that, but these guys,
there's no blood on
that
TV.
Until it's on screen,
I don't believe it.
It's not.
I mean,
but then when it is on screen, they go, that was a cover-up. Han was really working with Mr. Nobody.
But also in these movies... Mr. Oh, God. But in these movies, they have done that to us a lot, right? Dewey was supposed to die in one, but the test screenings came back and they were like, man, these people love this guy. So they rewrote, they did that extra scene to get make sure he was alive. And then that was kind of the running gag all the way up until 5, when he does not come back.
Now, you know what? So we talked about, was this movie just a year ago? To their credit, they pumped this thing out fast, and to their detriment. It's like, you got to imagine. So the first one has a budget of like $20 million and makes $130. And that's why I was talking to Tom off mic, when it's like, you know, they only have so much budget. Like, I know that Neve Campbell has her worth and everything. I'm not saying we wouldn't have liked to see her, but these movies aren't $20 million and
these
they make Marvel $700
movies.
Million.
That's true.
So they have to do the math and like, okay, so we give it a 20, it makes 130. We give them a 50, hopefully it makes two something. You know, like, it's proportional in a way to where
adding Sydney to this movie isn't going to bump it $50 million.
Right. And so as much as we like her, but like, they got to go like, well, then that's our whole return, you know, whatever it is. So the point being, though, this Scream 5 comes out in January of 2022. Mm-hmm. Scream 6 comes out in March of 2023.
That's
within
two,
one year, they had to write a script, film it, get it post-production, get it ready. And so
that's too fast.
It is. And I don't think they had time to, the studio probably wanted one now, if you guys want to be attached. And these guys are good. Like we said, I think this whole team is good.
Yeah.
I think that they had them under the time crunch and they came up with the best they could in the circumstances. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt because they are good at what they do.
I think you make a good argument.
And look at the timeline.
Yeah. And like we said, it's not bad. It's like when I used to hear my parents get talked to at parent-teacher conferences.
I did not know where that was going to go.
It's just like we expected more from him. We know he can do better work.
Right. That's exactly... I agree with you completely.
I could do better work.
You can do better work, especially on this podcast.
This is entertaining. I was entertained, but I was ultimately disappointed because I know how good these are. And that fifth one, I think, is like top-tier Scream.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. But again, look at that timeline. They had no time to do
this. Yeah, give them a year.
They came out with an okay
movie.
Give
them 2 years
They came out with an okay movie in a year from start to finish. So, like, man, if this had time to simmer, if this came out in Halloween, it doesn't have to come out in March. If this came out in the spooky season,
I was looking at like what could be on the docket for Halloween, right? And the last couple of years, it's been a Halloween movie.
Exorcist is probably the biggest horror film that's going to be, I think it's October 13th.
And that's a requel.
And
But... Oh, is it supposed to be?
It absolutely is. They're bringing back who played the mom in
Linda Blair?
No, she played the daughter.
I don't remember.
They're bringing back the mom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The actress, the original actress, is coming back to play the same character.
What about The Pope's Exorcist or whatever?
That's definitely a movie that's been filmed.
Yeah.
I wonder if that'll be good.
Probably not.
But I saw the trailer to that one because I, like Kevin, I do my very best to avoid trailers. But I went and saw 65 yesterday, and that was very unusual trailers playing before this movie. It got a little of everything. Evil Dead, The Exorcist, and a couple others. And so I was like, well, it's a movie.
Okay.
But yeah, I think I totally agree. You could do better. We expect better out of you.
Yes.
It's still a Scream movie. It's very much a Scream movie.
And
that's where it's like with these guys, you know, you could have, man, switch that, go a different route, that opening scene. Let us follow him the whole time and watch the tension as he's right there.
Yeah. The whole time.
They're sitting right there with the killer and we know it and they don't. And I don't know. That could be really interesting.
I think it would have been very interesting. Yeah. Or bring back Stu.
I just wonder, I mean...
Or maybe... fix that third act. Either fix the third act or make a totally different movie.
I agree. Either or. That's pretty good.
Awesome. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And Ryan, where can they find you and your wares?
You can find me on Twitter at RLTerry1. And as kind of apropos to the movie, you can also now find me on Letterboxd. I finally caved and started one, which is, I think, letterboxd.com/RLTerry1. Kind of is like my Twitter.
Awesome. I have a Letterboxd as well.
I'm too lazy. Yeah.
And I don't think I'm following you, so I will have to fix that.
Do it. Same thing as Twitter. JoeyButts21 on Letterboxd.
All right.
And you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, don't forget our Patreon. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Jason's face is melted by toxic waste.
Get ready for a spoiler. Say it twice, 'cause we already warned ya. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.